This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to the Enterprise Biz Bytes. It's a beautiful Monday afternoon today, and it's also very nice to hear a kid's voice reading the news as part of Universal Children's Day. Anyways, my name is Jeff Sandu, and I'm here with
Christine Wong,
Frida Liu,
and on the show today, you can hear us talking about a new, probably. I think Facebook may have done this accidentally, but it may make you think twice about posting something online in the future. It could be permanent. It could be a mistake that is now probably a permanent feature. And then we'll talk a bit about smartwatches and why Germany have banned a certain type of smartwatches. And then Time has released their 25 best inventions of 2017. And we'll pick out some of the more interesting ones that we see on the list. And also the world's first space nation was just launched in as a satellite into the orbit. And of course, it being a Monday, we will talk about some of the events that will be happening this week. But Christine, what has Facebook done that's going to make me think twice about posting something online now?
Right. So this week, dozens of users of Facebook have reported that Facebook has removed the ability to delete posts.
Ooh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
So for at least some users, clicking the drop-down menu on the top right side of a post no longer contains a delete function. It shows only the following options: save post, edit post, turn off notifications for this post, and show in tab. Now, the function so far, this kind of glitch, it seems like, is only on the desktop version.
Right.
So if you're on your computer, you might not see the delete button. It's still, however, on all the mobile apps, including iOS and Android. Mm. I went onto Facebook and double-checked this myself. I don't have that problem.
Me too.
I can still delete posts if I so wish.
I've checked it. I'm still okay.
But if you cannot find where to delete posts, you might have to look under the less easily accessed activity log section,
where
you can delete posts from your activity log. But not a lot of people know where that is.
Mm.
So it's kind of a thing where no one is actually sure if Facebook is trying something out, like a new feature where they're trying to teach people, okay, you know, maybe you should learn a little bit more about what you post.
Think before you post.
Or if someone's just pressed the wrong button and something has disappeared.
So Facebook hasn't made any comments yet?
No, it's not. Facebook is not engaging with anyone who's queried the issue. It has not made any announcements. It has not really responded to these claims. But quite a lot of people, especially on the Twitter sphere, have been freaking out a little bit.
Because it's a bit worrying, right? Because I hate Jeff Sandu. And then, I can't delete.
You can't
delete. But I can edit. I love Jeff Sandu.
Well, the other thing I think to go around this, if this becomes a permanent feature, is that you could still edit your post. And you could just edit them to like, post is deleted.
Yeah, you could.
You could do that as well. But there's a reason to why maybe Facebook want to actually do this. Right?
Yeah, so basically the current theory is that maybe it could be a ploy to get users to rely more on the mobile app instead.
Mm.
Because not a lot of people use Facebook on their desktop anymore, and a lot of people will go on their phones
That's
to
true.
Use Facebook. Same thing goes for Twitter, for example, right? So it might be a ploy by Facebook to try and move more and more people towards the mobile app, and then that leads to them having to download all the side apps like Messenger and things like that as well. But we don't know if this is on purpose or not still.
Don't know. But also there's an algorithm part of the story as well where, you know, they just don't want you to remove stuff because it will mess up with the algorithm. So perhaps, you know, putting something that would be on permanently would help them. It's very dangerous to, you know, if you don't have the ability to delete a post, it's a very risky area. But if you're a prominent figure, if you're a world leader, that ability is actually taken off from you. You are by right, you can't actually delete or edit your posts if you're a public figure or, you know, a world leader. So
it'll
be interesting to see how some people work around this if it becomes a permanent feature. Right now, a lot of people are suspecting that maybe Facebook accidentally deleted something in their code. And
the
they're just like letting it go. Let's just see how it happens then.
At the moment, it seems more like a glitch that they're exploiting as an experiment, but we'll see how it goes.
Right. Yeah. And some world leaders don't really care what they tweet about anyway.
That is true. Now, moving to Germany. The German regulators, they've banned the sale of smartwatches that is aimed at children, because they describe them as spying devices. So Frida, I know you got a 12-year-old kid, 13-year-old?
15.
15 now.
Yeah.
Oh my god,
we'll
time
be 15.
Flies.
So I want one of those watches.
But we've seen stories. So, yeah. So we've.
Okay. I want to know where he is every moment because he's 15.
So the telecoms regulator, the Federal Network Agency, they've urged parents who have, you know, watches, which is called like My Friend's Kayla, which is like an interconnected doll. They've previously banned this as well. They've urged parents who have these kind of interconnected watches to destroy them, to just throw them away, because it has led to a lot of hacks within the system itself. And a lot of these manufacturers, I think about a few months ago, we spoke about how these devices are actually the easiest gateway to the activity, be it your children or yourself itself. So I think Germany is just kind of up the ante in the sense that they're telling people, if you're going to make a smartwatch that's aimed for children, you have to make sure that security is like the forefront of, you know, your development process itself. Because right now, a lot of people, we've seen baby monitors getting hacked. We've seen, you know, now the smartwatches for children getting hacked. I think they're using children as a gateway. All these hackers are using children as a gateway, which a lot of parents probably never thought about it that way.
Yeah,
yeah. Which is interesting to see how, you know, Germany's probably realizing that, hey, it's not only parents who's tracking the children here. Some weird, creepy people are also tracking the children here.
Yeah, you know, I think that's the problem with a lot of kind of GPS tracking things. Like even stuff like the Find My iPhone feature even on iPhones and stuff like that can actually be used for nefarious purposes if used in that way. Like, you know, anyone can pick up a thing and say, hey, go find my iPhone. And then they could just find someone random's iPhone. Mm. Any kind of system where you can track the location of anything, especially when it's aimed at children, it's going to be a little bit risky.
Yeah.
So I think it's more about, you know, it's not just smartwatches, it's like phones, it's any kind of electronic device that has a GPS, anything, right? Basically, I think it's important for people, especially parents who want to kind of be able to monitor their children, but also to make sure and to doubly and triply check that this stuff is so secure, because if it is infiltrated in this way, it can be very, very dangerous.
Yeah, because in October, the Norwegian Consumer Council, they reported that some children's watches, including the Gator and GPS for kids, they had flaws such as transmitting and storing data without encryption. And that with encryption is the key here. I think they're looking to make sure that, you know, whatever data you're sending across is not just a readable kind of data. It's, you know,
and it's sad, right? Difficult. I mean, initially when we talk about tracking, it was actually for the good, and now it's, you know, a tool that's being used for not so good.
It's always the case, and I think it's again because, you know, we're opening up so many doors into our homes, like Amazon's one, and, you know, they want to deliver parcels into our homes as well. The ease of doing things now is a lot better, but it presents a lot of risk. And sometimes we don't question, like we don't go out and buy a smart TV and ask how secure is this smart TV.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of fascinating because in exchange for security, we're kind of paying for it with privacy, which almost makes no sense. It sounds like a paradox, right? But it's so fascinating that, you know, the more secure we try to make things, somehow the less private we are as well.
Yeah, so currently a lot of these smartwatches that's aimed for children are using, strangers who use basic hacking techniques could actually just track your children, where they move, or make the child disappear, or to be in a completely different location to, you know, alert. It's just sort of freak the parents out. So it's not clear whether German authorities have decided to do this ban because of these privacy issues, or there's like a wider security flaw that they know. But, you know, I think it's just a good move to, like, okay, you only will be able to sell if you hit these certain requirements, especially when it's aimed for children. I just hope that it should be more wider than just children. I think every device should have some sort.
And that was our story for Universal Children's Day.
All right, there we go. Anyways, speaking of monsters and men in this world, we will be playing Crystals on BFM 89.9.
Busy finding money. BFM 89.9.
And we're back. This is the Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet us at BFM Radio to tell us about some of the stories that we talked about earlier on. Are you against or are you for the ban of, you know, the smartwatches that is aimed at children, since it's Universal Children's Day? And Time Magazine, they generally do this on, I think they've been doing this for the past 20 years or so. They have released the 25 best innovations of 2017. And it's an annual unranked list, so there's no number one, number number 25. It's just the best 25. In the past, they featured stuff from the floating light bulb. They've done like the DNA lab, which is CRISPR. We've talked about it a lot. So this year, the 25 inventions that has made the cut. Frida, what's your pick?
Seeing that it's Universal Children's Day, a portable wearable breast pump. Okay, I think I'm the only one qualified to have used one of those, right?
Okay, yep. Continue.
So that's the thing, right? Especially for mums on the go. Yeah. And most, you have either the manual pumps, so electric breast pumps, and they're usually air horn shaped collection bottles, right? And they are usually attached to loud whirring machines. I think we've heard them. them in the office. Ah, I see. Someone's at it, right? So this is an invention by Mountain View, California-based company. Willow is working to change that. Its battery-powered alternative is quiet and small enough so women can slip into their bra and pump wherever they want. So each is lined with a freezer-safe bag. So instead of scheduling life around the pump, which is what you do, right? You can play with an older child, take a conference call. What happens is that it's really quiet.
Just carry on your life like how you normally would, right?
Okay, yeah. So it's very different from the traditional model. I think it just sort of, you can slip it in there. But it comes at a price. It's $480 US plus 50 cents per 4-ounce bag. And you're going to use a lot of those bags. So I think even in, US terms, if you're going to use a lot, that's going to cost you quite a bit. But still, it is a great step forward, right?
It is. I guess, they may be the first to do this, but I think in at least in a few more months' time down the road, you would see the price, being
hopefully.
Because that's currently, it feels like that's the only issue with the Willow pump here. It's that the price compared to traditional ways, it is still pricier. So you're kind of, you're kind of missing out on the majority of women who are in that motherhood stage because, cost is something that they will always take into consideration.
Yeah, but I would say the same thing would go for any kind of prototype thing that is trying to break through, like an industry that's been suffering with not a lot of development for so long.
And if you have more kids, then you get a better ROI.
Yeah, true.
Oh, divided by 4, divided by 6. So Naomi Kelman says it is making design tweaks based on feedback from mom. So it's just testing a better beta version now. So let's see.
All right. Christine, what do you have?
Well, again,
going to stick with the Universal Children's Day theme, trying to pick out something for the kids here.
So one thing that kids will probably enjoy is a little bit of a sweet treat on a hot summer's day. However, this is more in line with making adults a bit more guilt-free. So what this is, it is a flavor-packed low-sugar ice cream with no more than 360 calories per pint. So this is a brand called Halo Top, whose containers invite patrons to go ahead, eat the whole pint in one sitting. And the company's CEO has called this healthy ice cream, essentially. This ice cream is enriched with protein, uses stevia along with cane sugar and sugar alcohol as well. They're not exactly paragons of nutrition, but they're better than the sugar that you find in normal ice cream, I guess. Now, I'm kind of torn on this because, first of all, I think ice cream is something where it's like, if you're going to go for it, go for it. You know what I mean? Like, I've seen reviews, actually. I've seen comparisons of this low-calorie ice cream and full-calorie ice cream of similar flavors. And the full-calorie ice cream wins every time just based on taste in a lot of ways. So it's a bit like, if you're going to treat yourself, you might as well go the whole
just
hog.
Just go full on.
And treat yourself. However, I do understand that people who are trying to watch their sugar intake and people who are trying to approach things from to go more the artificial sweetener route, might prefer this and might see it as a good alternative without feeling too guilty about what they're consuming. And it is, in general, relatively healthier when you look at all the ingredients than normal ice cream. So I think, if I'm not mistaken as well, Halo Top also has some sort of a lactose-free thing as well. Don't quote me on that. But this company seems to be trying its best to make ice cream a little bit more accessible to people and a little bit more guilt-free to people, which is quite nice. It's very sweet.
Yeah, so they retail at $5 per pint, which is...
Me a dozen.
Yeah, right? So with the price and also the fact that it is technically healthier for you, I mean, that's an amazing marketing combination.
Clearly, there's a huge market for healthier ice cream because, their annual sales, they saw 2,500% up compared to last year, and it recently beat Haagen-Dazs and Ben & Jerry's to become the best-selling pint in America.
I mean, listen...
Wow.
Wow.
And I think a lot of people will pay any amount of money to feel better about the snacks that they eat. So
healthier anything.
Exactly, mm-hmm. right?
It's but like, we see that in brands these days. Some of them, they slap on, you know, the healthier option or the greener option on their packaging.
Exactly.
But it's not necessarily healthier.
Yeah, double check the ingredients list before you buy, guys.
It looks like at least they're using natural stuff like that.
That is true. Okay, that is true.
Yeah. And the other thing that's on the list that is something that Christine, you spoke about before, which is Fenty Beauty.
Okay.
Are you happy that it's made onto, like, you know, best 25 inventions of 2017 here?
Right. So I am of two minds about this because, first of all, I think that Fenty Beauty is revolutionary in a lot of ways. However, makeup and foundation and things like that aren't inventions that are recent.
Right.
You know, people have been putting on makeup since ancient Greek, ancient Egyptian times. So not quite a, you know, a new thing. But I think the approach maybe might be the invention that they're talking about because, as I've spoken before about On Biz Bites, Fenty Beauty has released a very, very wide range of products, especially skin-related products, things like foundation and concealer that target women of color as well. And it's a wider range than a lot of other companies have ever thought about, as well as keeping up the quality of these products as well. So I'm very happy that it is getting the amount of recognition it is. I don't think that it is totally unhelped by the fact that Rihanna is a mega superstar.
Yeah,
but, you know, I think that for the beauty industry, this is a great step forward and I'm excited to see what comes next as well.
And Nike this year, they've announced a whole bunch of stuff, but what made it into the list, Frida, was the Nike Pro Hijab.
Okay, so this is a story. So a hijab that empowers Muslim athletes. Mm. Right? I'm going to read this and then I'm going to... So it's for women who play sports, right? If the material is too heavy, it causes excess sweating. Yep. If it's too light, it might fall off during competition. So, and if it's fastened the wrong way, you can feel like you're going to choke. So this is Manal Rostam, who is an Egyptian runner based in the UAE and the founder of the Surviving Hijab Facebook group, which has nearly 500,000 members. Mm. So Nike's Pro Hijab, which was put into development after talks with her, with UAE weightlifter Amna Al-Had in 2016, aims to shift the status quo. So it's supposed to be light, breathable fabric that wicks moisture, and athletes who have used the report report that it helps to manage sweat, right? So it's nothing. We've interviewed these people.
We've done this before. We've spoken about this before. Yeah.
And so I guess you've got a great name behind it called Nike, who's got a lot of money, and I guess it's tied up with, you know, with big names. So and so it's gotten that kind of traction. But it's, you know, we already have these brands in Malaysia that already have these things into consideration. So kudos that it's, you know, gotten some attention. But it's sad that because we don't have the kind of budget and we don't have that kind of name that, you know, we were able to talk about the brands in Malaysia that have come up with this already.
What I would like to pick out is the eSight 3, which is the glasses that give sight to the blind.
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, for millions of people who are legally blind, navigation is a routine challenge. So through the support of canes and guide dogs that can help, they can't actually mimic the actual vision. So eSight 3 can do that. Think of it as the world's most powerful pair of glasses. So once the user puts on the eSight, it records high-definition video and uses magnification, contrast, and proprietary algorithms to enhance that imagery into something that legally blind can see, enabling them to partake in various activities, including sports, that would otherwise be off limits. It's a $10,000 device, so it's not exactly cheap here. It was launched in February, and it's not accessible through to everyone. Although the company said that they are trying to help would-be buyers with funding sources, including grants as well. But it is cheaper than the company's earlier iterations as well. It's faster, it's lighter, it's equipped with a better zoom capabilities. And to date, the company estimates that they have been used by more than 1,000 patients. And I think giving sight to the blind itself is an amazing achievement.
Because I know a personal friend and I've seen the eyesight deteriorate, and it is really, really, really painful. It is really, really obviously very frustrating. And then something like this, you know, yes, it's 10,000, and hopefully, you know, if you can afford it and it's be able to see.
Yeah, the way of medical technology is changing so quickly. I think me and Matt will be talking about med tech very soon on Matt's Plane as well. It's one of those areas that will be a buzzword in 2018. There are a few more on this list. There's things like the iPhone 10, which I don't get it why it's going to be on this list. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, the iPhone doesn't deserve to be an invention. I think any smartphone shouldn't be on this list because it's a smartphone. It's right. It's not a groundbreaking thing. So I don't understand why the Nintendo Switch as well made it into this list. There are a few sort of items on this list that we're not a big fan of, especially the last one on my list here, which is the ultimate distractors. The fidget spinner made it onto Time's list as well.
Pray tell, what does this do?
Oh dear. We will just go around in circles trying to explain what a fidget spinner is. Anyways, we'll go for a short break when we come back in just a moment. This is Rush with Limelight, BFM 89.9.
Building first world mindsets, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to the Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Jeff, together with Christine and Frida. Now, let's talk about space. Apparently, there is the world's first space nation. And I'm not a fan of their name because it sounds like it's just been taken off from like a comic book. Asgardia.
Oh,
That is literally Thor.
That's Thor,
that's
right?
That's where Thor is from. It's Asgard, and the people of Asgard are called Asgardians.
Asgardians, yes. So space nation Asgardia, they've launched its first satellite a year after Russian billionaire Dr. Igor Alshbulyeli. I don't know how I'm saying this. He proposed the plan. So more than 500,000 people have actually applied to become citizens of Asgardia, which is the first space station that will orbit the Earth and will be free. That's what they say here. Will be free from political and also laws. I'm not sure, like, how is this? Like, it's no laws at all. Anyway, so the idea came from a billionaire Russian computer scientist who has already confirmed the first 200,000 citizens from the initial 500,000 applicants.
That would be Russia's Elon Musk.
I think he could be the Russian Elon Musk. So earlier this week, Asgardia 1 satellite was launched. The satellite is roughly the size of a loaf bread, so it's really tiny. It contains the personal details of 18,000 of these Asgardians citizens, including things such as family photographs. There's also a copy of the Asgardia flag, coat of arms, and constitution aboard. Anyone above the age of 18 and with an email address, regardless of gender, nationality, race, religion, and financial standing, can apply for a citizenship to be an Asgardian. The satellite was launched from NASA's Wallops flight facility in Virginia, and the Asgardia 1 made its journey into the ISS aboard the OA-8, which is the NASA commercial cargo vehicle. The vehicle docked the ISS space station on November 14th to perform its primary mission of delivering supplies to astronauts there. The satellite will remain in orbit between 5 to 18 months as it will likely to burn up and disappear. The Russian billionaire has plans to convince UN to recognize Asgardia as a nation. However, it's currently not recognized by any country on Earth. The only benefit currently offered to its citizens of the space nation is the ability to upload your data onto the Asgardia 1 in orbit. And the billionaire said that, "I promised there would be a launch, and here we go. There is a launch. We've selected NASA as a reliable partner because we have to meet the commitments that we made 13 months ago. The Asgardia 1 will contain data stored up to 1.5 million Asgardians on board the satellite." And he says, "These are historic days. Your names and data will forever stay in memory of the new space humanity as they will be reinstalled on every Asgardia satellite they launch." So, I didn't know there was a space station, a space nation.
I mean, okay, so this is my question. What's the point?
So, no point, yeah.
No. Because when you say space nation, it implies like it's going to be like WALL-E and everyone's going to be on a spaceship and they're going to go into space and to live in space. The whole concept of a nation is a place where all these people live together as a community, one assumes. But no, it's just a block with names on it.
The thing I have a problem is that they call themselves the residents of the space nation, but you're living here on Earth. So
exactly.
You're thinking space is your home, but you're not in space. space. So
your name lives in space, but you do not live in space. I'm so sorry. You don't get to say that you're the resident of a space nation when you're not in space.
Oh, dear. But they are trying hard to get UN to, you know, approve them as these as a nation, as a proper nation.
But this is the thing. Like, but what makes them a proper nation? They're not even all in the same place physically at all. I mean, technically, they're it's like you sent a list. If you wrote a list of names down, you wrote a list of 100 names and you just like flung it in the ocean, and then it's like, wow, now we're an ocean nation.
You know, what's interesting is that they have to be considered for admission in the United Nations, a nation must meet 4 conditions.
All right.
And according to the Asgardian press release, 3 of those conditions,
there you go,
which is a constitution, a government, and a currency, have already been met. The 4th one, which is a territory, they've not picked that out yet.
Yeah, I think that's my main issue with this, is that like I feel like you can't really call yourself a nation without like an actual physical space.
How do you define this area in space is mine? Like, yeah. how do you draw that line in
the
in
entire
space?
Void of space is yours, or like the distance from one star to another star? Like, yeah, how does that work?
How does borders work in space? Anyways, you know, I guess we'll find out more of these billionaires and what they're doing with their billions of Russian dollars and what they're thinking of in space. It's a Monday, so we will take a short break, and when we come back, we will share with you some of the events that are happening in and around this week, and also what's coming up at 1 o'clock. We'll be right back. Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Barcelona, Fiorentina, Manchester United, BFM 89.9.
And we're back for the Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Jeff, together with Frida and Christine, and it's a Monday. So, events. Frida, what's coming
up? All right. Okay, this is the ASEAN Women of Tomorrow Conference. It's being held on Wednesday and Thursday, the 22nd and 23rd, from 8 to 5:15 at Sunweb Resort. So, the ASEAN Women of Tomorrow Conference is an interactive 2-day event specifically designed for corporate women and entrepreneurs who want to be successful and impactful. I'm sure that's why we organize these events. The keynote speaker is Annelise, the Managing Director of the Kaya Group, and she's a leading global futurist and motivational speaker. So it's also a great opportunity to network. So you can go to leadwomen.com/conference. Just do a search, right? It's 800 ringgit if you're only turning up on the 23rd, and 1,600 if you're going for both the 22nd and 23rd.
All right. And coming up also on the 22nd of November from 9 a.m. till 12 p.m. is the Malaysian E-Commerce Expo. It's happening at the Matrit Exhibition and Convention Center. The ME Expo will return on the 22nd till the 24th to offer local and international trade buyers an opportunity to implement the O2O, which is offline to online strategy and changing the traditional business culture. The e-commerce industry players and public, they're all welcome to visit and attend the trade show and conference, with an exhibition hall that's featuring almost 3,200 square meters. Discover cross-trade broader e-commerce platforms, website implementation, internet marketing, and the whole gist that surrounds the e-commerce space. The entrance is free, and you can pre-register today at meexpo.com.my, or can just do a Google search. Christine.
And then we also have an event. This is an event called Bar Camp. It's happening on Saturday, November the 25th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Digi headquarters. Now, Bar Camp is something quite interesting because they call it an ad hoc unconference born from the desire for people to share and learn in an open environment. So there is no keynote speaker. The participants are the keynote speakers. Anyone with something to contribute or with the desire to learn is welcome and invited to join. When you come, be prepared to share it with Bar Campers. When you leave, be prepared to share it with the world. Attendees must give a demo, a session, or help with one, or otherwise volunteer or contribute in some way to support the event. So if you are interested in this, tickets are free. Go look at them and get them from PTIX.
All right, that's it for today's show. Just before we give you what's coming up at 1 p.m., just a recap of today's story. Christine, you talked about Facebook.
Yes, so I talked about how Facebook has removed the delete post option from some of their desktop web websites.
Mm-hmm. And then in Germany, they have banned the sale of the smartwatches that is aimed at children. And then we also talked about and discussed about the 25 best inventions of 2017, according to Time. And Frida immediately picked out the
portable breast pump.
Yes, and then of course
Universal Children's Day.
On Universal Children's Day. Also, we talked about the world's first space nation, as they have just launched a satellite into the orbit. Now, coming up at 1 p.m., Vivi Yusuf, she's the co-founder of Fashion Valley and also the Duck Group. She's made a name for herself as one of the pioneer entrepreneurs in the Malaysian e-commerce scene. So the Breakfast Grill Group, they spoke to Vivi about her entrepreneurial journey, the future of her successful homegrown ventures, and also the evolving e-commerce landscape in Malaysia. This has been the Enterprise Biz Bytes, and if you miss any parts of the show, you can download the BFM app that's available on the Apple App Store or Google Play. All the links and stories will be embedded within the podcast itself, so you can actually get the sources of where we pick these stories out. For Christine, Frida, and me, Jeff Sandu, Richard will be back tomorrow, so you will hear a different voice altogether. Anyways, this has been the Enterprise Biz Bytes. Have a lovely Monday, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.